Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Alarm, you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
Dan, get excited. I just did some jumping jacks. I'm ready to go.
Get excited, Dan. We're blowing the audio off this. We're blowing it up here on the Net Live. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the 10th of May, 2010. We are excited you have joined us here on the Net Live. It's going to be another great program. You know why, Dan?
No.
Because it's just you and me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I knew that.
We've gotten rid of Reed. We've gotten rid of Geeter. It's just you and me and all these great guests from the world of volleyball.
What are they doing?
We'll get to that in a minute. Let's give you a little preview of the program. On today's show, we have a couple of great guests coming on. First, we have Billy Berger from the Corona Wide Open Tour. He's going to come on and talk about some of the old school rules, the new school rules, history of beach volleyball, and maybe just yell at Dan. We'll have to see what happens. Then we have...
Doesn't everybody?
Yeah. There are a lot of people that are angry with you, but it's the bad things you keep saying about them.
What else?
Stanford head coach John Costi is going to join us now. National champion head coach John Costi, fresh off the Cardinals' big victory there this past weekend, taking down the men's NCAA championship. So we'll cover that NCAA championship. We'll talk about that. We have the USA Men's World League roster, which was announced shortly after our last show. There are some notable omissions and additions there. We've got questionable calls, and of course, your calls, 347-677-1525. If you want to get in the show, give us a shout. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you want to know about out there in the world of volleyball. Now, we do have Reed Pretty. I think we have him. Is he here?
What's up, guys?
Oh, we didn't get totally rid of him. We have him for about 5 minutes before he needs his beauty sleep.
But you got rid of like half your listeners once you said that Geeter and I weren't going to be on the show.
Well,
off their podcast already.
Jay Hook on the chat board, he's like, bummer, I wanted to chat with Geeter about the Northards match.
Ooh, yeah, we'll get to that.
Maybe that's why he didn't come in today. I have a sneaky feeling.
He's wearing all black, no red, because he's very upset about what happened back last Thursday. It was ugly. I watched it.
Wait, Geeter's in the chat board.
Well, he said he's going to be hanging around. We may hear from him, but they're not here in the studio. So just to clarify, Reed Pretty, in the outpost, needs his beauty sleep. Reed, give us your update on what's going on in Russia. First and foremost, why are you still there, for crying out loud?
They love to play series. They just love it. So we're actually in a series to what they actually call it the bronze medal. So for third place, we're competing against Dinamo. For those of you who followed some of my links, you might have seen them play in the Champions League final last week. They lost to Trentino, and we are actually 1-1 against them. We came out and played pretty good on the first night, and then as per usual with our group right now, we come out on the second night, the two back-to-back nights, and we just got absolutely hammered. We didn't have anything going for us. It was a complete total. At least we did it as a team, I guess. It hit the fan as a team, so we all consoled ourselves on the dance floor the remainder of that evening.
Nice.
And now we're much better friends for it.
Nice. I like it. Hey, we have somebody else. We might be able to complete the net live right now. Geeter.
Hello, friends.
Uh-huh. The net live is... We lied. Everybody's in the house.
Yeah.
Global
network.
This is our big time.
Sorry, I'm just on the top floor at the Grand America Hotel listening to you guys on my computer.
I'm surprised you're not out hitting another 18 with, like, Lamar Odom or something.
Yesterday it was a beautiful day, guys. Wally Joyner, former Major League Baseball player, set up a round of golf for Adam Morrison, Jordan Farmar, Luke, and myself. Only ones on the course in the mountains called Hidden Valley. Oh, just incredible. And Luke and I sad to say, lost to Adam and Jordan in a very close battle, and Luke handled the bank, thank God.
What did you shoot?
I shot a 94, and Adam Morrison, who I was matched up with, shot an 86. He played really well. It was a tough course, man, like not knowing it, and I had a few blow-up holes, but besides that, I played pretty damn good. I was actually really excited about that.
How many times did the drink cart come by?
No drink cart. We loaded up pregame and had it all in our cart already.
Very nice. Very nice.
I'm guessing you're dominating the dialogue that entire round. Did you get in under anybody's skin?
That was really my role, to be honest with you. I think I handled that role pretty well. But I'll be honest with you, those guys are on each other all the time. I mean, it is nonstop banter around here.
All right, well, tell us about your job. How's your actual job been going?
Job went great. We left Friday afternoon. It was pretty cool to be on one of those flights, those charter flights. Nobody bothers you and says, put on your seatbelt, turn off your cell phone, don't walk around. I mean, everyone's just like walking around and talking, and the plane takes off and lands in an hour and 10 minutes, and no one bothers you. All they say is, what can I get for you? I mean, it's just a beautiful thing. The next day, I went to shoot around. And then that game, I don't know if you guys watched it, but probably one of the best games I've ever seen live. And the atmosphere in Utah was insane. I mean, it really is the loudest arena, that in Oklahoma City. But the fourth quarter, just the way they were trading blows, it was like a heavyweight fight. For the Lakers to win it at the end made my job so much easier. I got a Pau Gasol walk-off interview. You know, only three networks got walk-off interviews on the floor, and we were one of them. Heather
nice.
Cox with ABC and ESPN got Kobe, and I got Pau. So that was really, really cool, you know, to be a part of it like that on that floor after that moment. Then went into the locker room. I got about four interviews. That night we had a great dinner. Some of the guys were out, like Lamar and Luke and Jordan, my producer and cameraman. We had a group of about 10 of us. They kept open the steakhouse for us. So that was a really cool experience. And then yesterday I just went to practice, did a little soundbite, did something for FoxSportsWest.com, and then we went out and played golf. So it's been really like a vacation, to be honest with you guys. But it's been really cool to be around the team and travel with them and stuff like that. It's been a once in a lifetime, to be honest with you.
I love the fact that the two people getting walk-off interviews are both volleyball related. You and Heather Cox.
I know, isn't that great? You know, I got to say, Heather Cox is a phenomenal sideline reporter. I really think she's one of the best in the business, to be honest with you. She does a great job in those NBA games.
Well, I'll tell you what, she must be. She's got that job for ABC. They don't hire any shows over there. That's for sure.
Exactly. You guys got a packed show today, I hear.
We do, man. John Costi's going to be here. Billy Berger's going to be here and try and wring Dan's neck. It's going to be excellent.
How about that loss for the North Matadors? Penn State played unbelievable.
Yeah, I watched that one. I didn't see a lot of heart from the Matadors there.
I didn't either. And, you know, as I wrote that the Matadors choked, of course I'm not trying to take anything away from Penn State. Penn State just outplayed them, and Pav had a way better game plan, I thought, but not that Jeff didn't, but he really went back to the drawing board after the Matadors beat him three straight a couple weeks ago. But to not have any kills from your outside hitters in game one, I just don't know what that is.
I think you just hit on it. I think it was the game planning. You looked at the positioning of the Penn State defense. They were in the right spots all the time. When Northridge tipped, they were right there. And then the Penn State libero, what a great job. Man, he made plays.
Yeah. I didn't have a chance to talk to Campbell, but I talked to him the week before, and I mean, that was the first time we were there since 93, so, you know, a lot of nerves, I'm sure, but the libero for Northridge did not play well. I mean, he got it, and that was a big difference. The biggest difference in that game that I can see was the passing.
And you can see the emotion, too. Northridge was trying to generate this fake emotion, this fake rah-rah, but it didn't really look like they were truly together. And then Penn State made a great play out of their outside hitters, too.
Yeah, you know, when that first game and then about the midway part of that game too, you just saw that Penn State from the get-go thought that meant nothing a few weeks ago. We're winning this match for sure. And Northridge just did not have that look of like, we're going to fight and come back. I mean, yeah, they made it a game in game three, but it was over.
Yeah, I think we talked about maybe the best teams not being there in Penn State and Ohio State, but that matchup with Penn State and Northridge, it wasn't a case of Northridge playing poorly. I thought it was a case of Penn State really taking it to them and making plays and being the better team.
Yeah, they made plays. They served like, you know, Northridge was really the great serving team that everyone talked about coming in. Remember, Billy Ferguson talked about that the week before. But Penn State just beat them in every aspect, I thought.
So I had a couple other questions, too. Why the 30? Why are we still playing the 30 in the men's game?
I don't know. Reed, what do you guys play overseas?
Everybody.
25.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening here. I mean, ADP goes to 21 and the international indoor goes to, what, you know, 25. I don't know. Should we just be at 25 for all indoor?
I know. It should be one thing. So I'm not sure why that is. The women are at 25. I don't know why the men are at 30. All right. And Pavlik, is he tanning? Because he looked like the tannest guy in the building.
He had to have gone. He was almost orange.
Yeah. He just looked like he had had a healthy June or July glow on him. I don't know what this.
Hey, Barney, I didn't hear the very beginning. Did you win your football games? Or was it canceled because of Mother's Day weekend?
I'll tell you what. We played Saturday night, 5 o'clock, and we had a good, good game. It finished in a 0-0 tie. No overtime.
That's like kissing your sister, Barney.
Oh, we were so close, too. There were two plays where one with my son and one with one of our other good running backs, and they were the last guy caught him. They were almost gone. The last dude caught him. And then we had him pinned with a minute and 20 seconds to go down at their own 20-yard line, fourth and five, about four and a half, fourth and four and a half, and we got jumped. We got the hard count.
Oh, the hard count.
Fell over, fell across the line, and that was it. It was a first down. We did get the ball back three plays later, but we had about 30 seconds to try and make a play, and no go on the end zone.
Hey, buddy, look at your team improving, though, huh?
Oh, huge improvement for my team. This team that we played, the Steelers, they had beaten us pretty soundly. The coach came up to me afterwards and said, "Hey, you know, you guys really got a lot better."
Hey, that's all that matters out there. When's Reed coming home? Damn it!
Never. He's gonna have
next week.
Place, and then they're going to have some other sort of playoff. He'll probably be here in July.
Now, what are you guys playing for now, Reed? I mean, it just keeps going, huh?
I know.
We're playing for third. So the two teams that lost trying to go to the finals are trying to play for third.
Oh, it's not okay.
Well, I know. But, hey, by the way, Kessie and Boss won an international event, so they got it going a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a great job taking home 30K for that effort out there. And
Did you call that game, Barney?
No, I did not see that one. I'm not sure who's calling those. If Dane has it, if Universal Sports is doing it. The last one I watched on Universal Sports, it was the English feed, the single announcer English feed.
Oh, yeah. Great.
No Americans on it at all, but I haven't checked back in the last event, so I'm not sure if they're still doing those.
Phil and Todd taking a fourth was surprising, but the third place match after you lose in the semis sometimes isn't an indicator of anything.
Well, Dan mentioned to me earlier that Todd can't sit with his hands. Now he's gone Tim Hovland or Hovland style. Not Tim Hovland.
Dan?
I read it somewhere. Maybe Hans article on ADP.com. He's been bump setting because his finger's all mangled from Santa Barbara.
Oh, Santa Barbara. He crushed his finger. That's right.
Yeah, so he's been bump setting. And who was it that beat them in the winners bracket that just served Phil every ball?
Probably some Brazilian.
Pedro. I think Pedro and Harley, maybe.
Pedro and Harley. It was Pedro and Harley. It served Phil every ball. I mean, how many times ever has that happened when Phil and Todd play together?
Yeah. That's
and
how about Harley Marquez, by the way? He's, what, like 72 years old?
Yeah, still cutting out like just a madman out there.
Oh, he's crazy flamboyant. He's like the old Andre Agassi.
Yeah, but his arm swing is one of the best I've ever seen live when they came to that event last year in Arizona. He's incredible, that guy.
Yeah, he's crazy fast, scary fast. So, all right, well, guys, should we keep you on the line and keep you on the show?
Real quick, I wanted to say something, which is shocking for me, but Billy Berger was the first guy to give me an MC gig, the old AVA days.
Nice.
AVA? What?
AVA, before I started.
I remember the AVA.
Yeah.
Amateur Volleyball Association, is that what that was?
Yes, exactly, and Billy Berger and I go way, way back.
Did you practice for that at Northridge Grass? I mean, when you had the mic there,
well,
announced the teams?
Tell you guys where I really practiced the craft was when you're a career backup setter and watching Matt Unger set for 3 of your 4 years of your career,
right.
You're on the bench, and you know in that volleyball, your bench stands up and you're at the end, and you know, you're in hostile arenas, and you got to learn how to heckle, and you got to learn how to talk about the game, and that's where I became kind of a coach and a heckler and a broadcaster. All in one was sitting on that bench.
So from riding the bench at Northridge, that's the training grounds for Lakers sideline reporter.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm understanding?
Riding the bench at the Ridge, I always tell John Price, yeah, I hated him for never playing me, but I loved him for starting another career that made me way more successful than I ever would have been as a volleyball player.
It's like NBA coaches. The best NBA coaches are the ones that ride the bench. They're pros, but they ride the bench the whole time. And then, you know
what? Because we got to work hard. We got to learn the craft. We got to listen to what the coach says because we're trying to get on the floor. When you're a star like Reed, Barney, and these guys, they just do it because they're athletically sick.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. They just do it.
They're not listening.
No brain.
Listening. Coach is like, hey, get up there at 11 feet and attack you. They're not listening.
No, there's very little brains in
just
what
do
I
it.
Do.
Yeah.
Get up, hit ball hard.
Did you ever give pep talks at Northwood?
What?
Did
oh
you ever
my
give?
God, that was my job.
Yeah, the
yeah,
pressure.
Yeah, literally my job. We chanted like a Pop Warner team in the locker room. You should have seen it.
All right, guys, I want to see if we can test our bandwidth here. I want to see if we can bring in Jay Hosick. Jay.
Yeah, Jay's a happy guy today.
I am here. Yes.
You are here. Now we're really pushing the limits of the technology here on the network.
Who else wants to call?
FlyballNetworks.com.
Our one cable.
That's right. We have one cable running through it. Small headphone cable, and we have all these people jammed onto it. Well, Jay, thanks for joining us here. Tell us a little bit about the semifinals before we get to the finals, about your performance.
First of all, my condolences to Geeter. I know he was very fired up.
Jay, I appreciate that.
You know, honestly, when we played CSUN last time this season, we had just gotten done traveling across the country, I think, three times, and we had 14 matches in 38 days, and our boys were just gassed. And that's not taking anything away from Northridge. They played extremely well that night when we were at their place, and they're a very, very good team. And they deservedly got a shot into the Final Four. But you know, you're right. You guys have mentioned game plan, and we watched tape, and we, you know, confirmed it watching the match, the last two matches of their season, and we put together, we thought, a pretty good scheme, and fortunately, the guys executed. I mean, you can create game plans all day long, and on paper, they're great, but if your boys don't execute, that's going to be a real challenge, and we just fortunately were able to execute the plays that we needed.
The one thing we really noticed, or I noticed, was the libero, the play of your libero, number 6. Remind me of his name again, please.
Dennis Del Valle from Puerto Rico.
Del Valle.
That's awesome.
He was excellent through that whole match.
He has been, you know, a lot of people, I don't want to say talk a lot of crap about that kid, but there's a lot of people that don't give him a lot of respect. And, you know, he was on the second team All-America selection. The only other libero on there was the Eric Shoji from Stanford, and deservedly so. I mean, Dennis keeps us in system, and that's, you know, anybody will tell you that knows the game, ball control is key. And when you're in system, your setter can really run the offense, and that's his strength. He's just one of those kids that just does a real nice job for us.
Hey, Jay, can I say something? The one good thing about you guys winning, and Reed will understand this because he's on the best ever LMU team, is it solidified the 93 Northridge team as still the greatest Northridge team of all time because at least we made the finals. That's the only positive I can take out of this.
You know what? I was at that match, and I remember watching you guys play in the finals and thinking, God, it's just so sad that they're not able to hold up with everybody else. But you guys played awesome back then. And CSUN, you know, Jeff Campbell, he took a program that lost. They dropped that program, I believe, in 97. And
they dropped
cut him off at the knees. And that guy has single-handedly kept that program afloat and has re-risen them back to the tops of the MPSF year in and year out. And you just can't say enough good things about that guy. His kids run through brick walls for him, and a lot of those kids have chips on their shoulder. They're not your typical blue-chip athletes. CSUN's incredibly tough to recruit to. And, you know, Campbell just gets these kids, and they work their butts off for him. And, you know, as unfortunate it is that somebody had to win and somebody had to lose, Jeff has done a real nice job down there.
Yeah, he really has. I mean, he's kept that program afloat when it needs to be afloat. And over the last 4 or 5 years, they've been right there. So it's nice that he finally got to go to that Final Four. And, you know, as I told him a couple weeks ago, I'm sure he's going to get a couple more of those, you know, within the next few years. I'm sure he'll get another one now that they've been there.
Yeah, and that's also true for our program. You know, the embarrassment of riches. Everybody talks about our conference not being that strong, and you know we're not going to hide around it and think that oh no, it's equal to the MPSF. It's obviously not. But that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. Our guys got to that Final Four, and they have that notion of hey, we've been here before, we know what to expect. And you know, is it the reason why CSUN lost? No, I think. I think their players were just as well prepared and just as willing to fight hard for that match. And I think it just, you know, maybe a point here and there might have been all the difference in the world. But, you know, I think you're right. I think they will be back there in a short time in the future, and you never know what can happen.
I think you're right, Jay. The experience of your players really showed in the way that they approached that match. And some of that is the coach, too, from gaining those kids that experience previously and then those kids being able to take that and take their own play forward. And speaking of great coaches, Mark Pavick, we have a couple of questions. First of all, is it a tanning booth or is it spray tan that he's going with?
You know, that's funny. I didn't notice it until you mentioned it, and I actually watched a little bit of the match this morning, just kind of decompressing from the whole thing. And yeah, Ryan, you did look a little George Hamilton-esque there for a minute, but I think he was actually outside hanging out, you know, by the pool with his kid. His wife and son came out for the visit, and I think they were playing in the pool, and you know, that's probably where he got a little bit more color from. But yeah, that was a little bit non-Pavlik-esque.
Yeah, he was changing sides, and yeah, Hamilton's a good call. The other one was, okay, this is a questionable call we'll have later, but we want your opinion while you're here. Is Mark Pavlik the best men's coach in the nation?
Well, you know, I'd obviously put him towards the upper echelons. I really hate to say the best coach in the country, not because, and I know he'll laugh probably if you heard me say that, but yeah, there are a lot of very, very good coaches out there on the men's side. And you know, I know we talk about this all the time. It's just such a shame that there aren't more opportunities for men's programs to sprout up around the country, because there's just so many opportunities out there for programs to start up and actually be real successful right off the bat. But yeah, he's right up there. He's calm, he's cool, he's collected. You know, nothing really rattles the guy, and you know when your team is in a situation where it's pressed and it's gotta perform, Pap does just a real nice job of just keeping even keel and keeping the guys focused on moving forward. And I'll tell you, I'm learning an awful lot from him. He's real good.
Terrific. Jay Hosek, assistant coach at Penn State, thanks for calling in the show. As always, we appreciate your commentary on what's happening. We wish you a lovely spring and summer there. Maybe you can get your surfboard out again.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it for the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you, Jay.
Thanks.
That actually worked pretty well. I'm impressed with the audio there. It's a little scratchy,
yeah.
but we're able to do it. Good stuff here on the Net Live. You're listening to Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. If you want to call in the show, 347-677-1525, we've just proven that you can actually call in. We can have Geeter.
We can handle it.
We can have Reed. Yeah, we're all set. Or you can email us anytime at thenetlive@gmail.com. We would love to hear questions, comments, topics that you want to talk about.
Or you can see Big Daddy owning the chat board right now.
Is he just dominating?
He's dominating.
Yeah, get in there on the chat board. Get to thevolleyballnetwork.com and click on, what, The Net Live? Go to our page, and you can be there in the chat board. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of things real quick. Let's touch on this, Reed. Touch on the CEV results and the Italian Super League. We have about 1 minute left, Mr. Pretty.
Oh, geez, nice.
Well, you can get us started, and we can come right back.
Basically, the Italian League final was yesterday, and they decided, we talked about it on a previous show, they decided not to go a series. They wanted to go just for a one-type Super Bowl event. And so the two teams that made the finals of the league are Cuneo, who won Chev, the Chev final, and Trentino, who won Champions League last week. So it was, you've got two of the best teams in all of Europe squaring off, and Cuneo ends up edging them out. And I think had that gone a series, maybe we'd see Trentino be the champion, but they decided to go this format, and we have a winner. And I think what's interesting that I wanted to note in the last 10 seconds was that their setter is Nikola Grbic.
Yeah.
And he is 38 years old. He's got a gold medal. He's got tons of championships. And the other top team in Europe right now is Kazan, and they're one match away from winning the Russian league again. And Loy Ball, 38 years old. So you've got two of the best setters, 38 years old. There's something to be said about staying in the game as long as possible and what kind of success you guys.
All right, Reed. Down by the music.
Like how you set that up, though, Barney.
I gave you 1 minute call. The Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We'll be right back to talk more about the world of volleyball. See you soon.
Hey parents, do you know about the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Hey, Reed.
Yeah, Dan?
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever.
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Or, is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench, sub yourself in, pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
You're listening to the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. We appreciate you tuning in. Right before the break, we had Reed Pretty, who we have now lost, although this time on purpose, not because of technology. We've lost him on purpose. He was he needed to get his rest for his trip to Moscow and his matchup with Dynamo. He has to win third place, a lot of money on the line, I imagine, for his contract. But he was talking about the fact that the Italian League went to a single game final. Now, there were series to get to the final, but they went to a Super Bowl style final. Dan, Geeter, you're still on.
Yes, I am.
What do you guys think about that? Do you prefer the series or the Super Bowl style?
For me, kind of weird because isn't there money to be made in having a series of games? Like, isn't that the idea? To me, like, NBA doesn't have a series of games so they can make sure that they have the best team win, you know?
Yeah.
They have a series of games because they can sell seven games of tickets and sell that much advertising for TV and online stuff. Like, it seems odd that you would potentially or pass up that money. No?
Yeah, for me, I like the March Madness style, you know, style we have in volleyball where it's one game Super Bowl. But if you're doing a series throughout the whole way to get there, then you stay with the series. You either do a series the whole time or you do a single elimination type tournament.
See, I don't think it's a revenue issue for him because I think maybe the publicity, the TV ratings for that single match, the gate for that single match, it was a sellout crowd in Bologna, just crazy looking. We have a great picture of it here, of the winning moment for Cuneo. It's just a terrific atmosphere, and I think it becomes more of a special event if it isn't stretched out over this long period of time. It's that match. It's big time. Everybody knows that's the place to be at that moment.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. I mean, it definitely means a lot more, that one game, to those players. They're playing harder, I would imagine.
Yeah, you're looking at a game that's probably worth 20 to 50 grand.
And you know what? I like the one gamer because that is everything on the line, and you know, it's like a game seven. It's everything.
Yeah, and I think you don't always get a game seven. You know, sometimes
you don't.
Great, but other times you just get a blowout, and there have been several NBA finals where by game three you're just going, well, this is over.
We're over it. Yep.
I would almost always choose a one game, except for the fact that, like, if I want to see two teams play, I want to see them play more than once.
You know what? Here's the thing, Danny, that if the one thing about a one-gamer is that anyone can win on that day. You know, a Villanova can beat a Georgetown in 85, you know, and Butler almost beats a Duke. So I think that is really exciting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so we vote for the one game.
I'm mostly sold. I'm not voting.
I think it'd be exciting.
I'm holding my vote.
All right. Well, you can't abstain.
Just don't do a series the whole way and then get to the one game. You know what I mean? Either do a series the whole way.
Single limb the whole way. I think maybe you guarantee that the two better teams make the final and then it's a showdown. No? No good?
You're onto something.
Okay. All right. We have an important topic here. Mayer and Madden versus Geeter and Wachfogel. Where and when? And intern Alex is going to tape it all. We're going to have a video. When is this going to happen?
Probably. Okay, go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, anytime, anywhere, let's film it. Let's get crowds. Let's do it before six-man, after six-man, AVP event, between finals, whenever you want to do it.
I think we do it before six-man in July sometime.
Okay. In the morning or in the afternoon? Is the table going to be round or square? I mean, we may have a lot of different conditions here you guys are going to put on this.
Ace, straight up, old school rules.
Yeah, how big is the court? Are there antennas?
Hold on.
What's going
ace,
on here?
Ace, I would feel bad because you don't play ace with Avian Water, which you and Mayer would want, so that'd be tough.
All right.
So
well.
Big court, small court.
There we go. Whatever the rules are today, right? And we play small court now. Right.
AVP rules, small court with antennas.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Who wins?
You can't ask me.
Dan, who wins?
All I know
you
can
just say John Mayer. You don't have to include yourself. You can say Mayer wins.
I actually forgot about this. And then Mayer, out of nowhere, comes up to me the other day. He's like, so, Madden Mayer versus Wachfogel Geeter. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Dude.
The problem with doing it at an AVP event before a final is I can't.
Why not?
Oh, because I'm doing TV, so I'll be in the truck.
We're just going to do it on a Tuesday.
And get ready.
A Tuesday morning
in
Second Street. People want to come down and check it out, see the showdown, or they can wait for the video.
The video would be great.
It'll be
Are you going to train, Geeter?
Have
you already begun?
Yeah. Yeah, I am going to train a little bit for that. I'm not going to go out there and just be a complete idiot.
All right, we're going to look at a late June. We'll give you a month here, maybe a month, month and a half. Late June.
Yeah, it's got to be July right after. It's got to be after JO's kids, which ends July 2nd.
All right. Give me time.
Yeah.
Are you a blocker?
I don't know what I am now in this day and age.
I'm a libero, right?
I mean, everybody, you see the guys out there? 7-footers out there.
There's not a blocker on either side of the court at that point.
Yeah, but you're like 6'3".
Yeah, believe me, I'm going to stuff Dan down. I guarantee you got at least three roofs in that match.
I think this should be on a girls' net. What do you guys think? Should we move it to a girls' net?
That would be fantastic.
No.
I could side out on a girls' net.
I don't want to play defense against Aaron on a court. I don't want to play defense against Aaron at all. He's going to hit me in the face.
And he's going to like it. He's going to be happy
about
it.
Dan, by the way, we're also doing an Olympics. You and I are going to play each other in a lot of sports. We're going to do basketball.
All right.
We're going to do tennis. We're going to do golf. We're going to do boxing, because I've always wanted to hit you in the face. And we're going to do the beach volleyball stuff with the team.
I already know who's going to win all this, because Dan has no experience with any sport outside of volleyball.
Oh, give me a break.
Indoor volleyball is a stretch for Dan.
Let's do shot put, discus, long jump, high jump. 100-meter dash.
I want to see a swim. I want to see like a half-mile swim.
Someone on the chat board asked if I was going to play with a megaphone. No, but what I will do is do one of those Whitney Houston wraparound mics so I can play with the hands-free and dialogue the whole time.
You're going to be like an evangelist priest.
We'll definitely have a mic hooked up. We'll definitely have one hooked up. All right, hey, we have to get to this guy here. We're proud to bring in our first guest of today. He is the operator of the Corona Wide Open Tour. And the man who first gave Geeter an opportunity to put a mic in his hand.
Yes, he did.
Billy Berger, welcome to the Net Live.
Oh, I could just sit here and listen to Geeter talk for another hour.
Appreciate that, Billy.
Well, Billy, let's get on talking about your tour here. Why is your tour going back to the old school rules after a decade of short court and rally scoring? What's the idea there?
Oh, how long is this show? The whole spirit behind it is that the purpose of the Corona Wide Open Tour, first of all, with Corona is a brand in itself. It's all about the beach and the beach lifestyle and the beach party, and that's really what I think initiated and drove people to playing volleyball and hanging out at the beach, because it wasn't about the game so much. It was about the lifestyle. And I think that there is a group of people out there, I being one of them, Karch Karai and others that feel that the sport has definitely evolved, but it's moved a little bit or a lot of it away from the lifestyle of what it initially was. And with companies like Corona, Spalding, which was the first ball of beach volleyball, Oakley, Surf Tech brands that are all about the lifestyle, it just seemed that there was a void in the marketplace for a beach volleyball property, a tour, that really was about the lifestyle less than the bump set hit. And we thought that, you know, like listening to you guys talk about the seven-footers playing and Dieter out there and you. I mean, the reality is that a full-size court and side-out scoring and no let serves and no antenna, it becomes the gladiator game again. It no longer is a sport built for just the big guys. So individuals like Camacho or Matty O or David Swadek or guys that are all around fabulous volleyball athletes and also fabulous nighttime enthusiasts, it helps shine. It helps them shine. So we figured there's an opportunity to really kind of create something that has something for everybody.
Hey, Billy, it's Geeter. Where do you see the tour maybe going within the next 5 years? Or what is the goal for you?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. First of all, the initial idea behind the tour was a series of events that qualified individuals into the U.S. Open of beach volleyball. Initially, Corona is the company that funded the idea that Karch and his guys from Elevation and USA Volleyball, we came together and got together on this idea of creating the U.S. Open of beach volleyball, and then realized that not only are there groups that we associate with, but we wanted to create a tour that qualified individuals, not just the open level, but from the novice B, A, AA, and open. So we're bringing out, last year we brought out, I think, 86 teams from around the country to Manhattan Beach for the championship. So the goal here is really to create a vehicle for people to get out there and play at all different levels, and then to sort of amalgamate all those different groups all over the country under one, you know, big volleyball festival party event. And again, that's a part of it right there. We're not a volleyball tour as much as we are a beach festival now. I mean, we've got – you can come out there on Saturday, and you're going to see the Oakley Fashion Show that's going to be reminiscent of what you would see in New York in a beach kind of twist where you've got the catwalk and everything, and you got the fun people getting out there with the girls in the bikinis with the Fashion Oakley stuff and dressed up in their headgear and looking good. And Sunday we're going to be doing a dance contest with swimming suits, bathing suits as well. We've got this crazy T-shirt area there that people are going to be able to come in and design T-shirts with an artist. We've got just a whole bunch of different things. We bring a DJ in from a nighttime guy. So it's more of a beach festival. So, Geeter, to answer your question in a long way, we want to create in markets beach festivals, similar to what you see down there at the U.S. Open of Surfing. I mean, that's the biggest event on the beach ever.
Gotcha.
Billy, do you think that AVP players will gravitate to your tour, or what would it take to get some of the AVP players to come onto your tour?
Yeah, you know, we ran the tour last year, and some of the I'll call it the lower rated players did participate in a select number of events. The prize money, and that has not been the focal point of this tour. The prize money definitely is not competitive to the AVP, and we've never looked at the AVP as something that we're trying to compete with. I think that the opportunity to play in a tournament that's all about the fun and all about allowing athletes that may not do as well in the AVP that will come out and shine because they're all around great volleyball players. They just don't happen to be able to play the 7 foot game. I mean, if you think back for a second here, real quickly, you take a guy like Craig Buck, if everybody remembers him, right, standing there with the gold medal from 1984, there was no chance in 1985 he was coming onto the beach and winning a tournament. Wasn't going to happen. Today, you could take a guy like a Craig Buck from the indoor, and in 2 months, he's ready to compete at a high level of the AVP because the overall training skill level and all that is different today.
Why do you think that 2010 is the right time for this tour to start taking off?
I would say that the it's an interesting question there, because the timing is right for volleyball to have something that's fresh. Volleyball has been watching the surf, skate, and snow business from a financial perspective, from a marketing perspective, eat its lunch. I mean, at the end of the day, Sean White, Tony Hawk, Kelly Slater, Rob Bisciotto, these guys are rock stars. These guys are millionaires. And they are in the same genre, the same vibe, the same lifestyle that volleyball used to be.
Right.
You take the Jimmy Mingus, you take the St. John Smith, you take Gary Hooper, Obradovich, you move it up to Timmons. These guys all were like those athletes I just mentioned in the surf, skate, snow. Volleyball moved away from that. And by doing that, they never enjoyed the success of all of those brands that are available to those lifestyle athletes. You don't see anybody getting sponsored at the level by Hurley or Quick, Billabong, O'Neill, Volcom, on and on and on. So they're missing the window of opportunity from a business perspective. On the marketing, you got Sean White. You got him standing up there doing an MTV award, either a recipient. He's given the awards out. It's just there's a marketing phenomenon going on with those athletes that the volleyball world isn't enjoying either. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to introduce the volleyball of the lifestyle side, which I think is so seamless and like a cousin of surf, skate, snow, in a fashion that they'll appreciate, that they'll respond to. I mean, just look at the sponsors that the Wide Open has versus the sponsors of other volleyball programs out there. We don't have any stick and ball brands. We don't have any, you know, mainstream brands. We are going after the same kind of brands that the events in Hawaii go after, or the events in Aspen go after.
Billy, I think you make a great point when you talk about the way X Games usurped the coolness of volleyball and took that same sort of vibe and all those sponsors with it. Who or what do you think made that shift occur?
They took volleyball from being a beach party and tried to make it into a sport. Surfing is not a sport. Snowboarding is not per se a sport. It's a lifestyle. Street skating. I mean, street skating is not a sport, and in all the skate world, street skating's where all the money is. The ramp skating that Tony Hawk does is less money than the street skating guys. So what happened is they took basically the soul out of the space. Guys were bringing 16 balls to the beach. You couldn't take winners. Guys were there at 9 in the morning. They left at 11. The young people that got to the beach at 1 didn't even know who the volleyball players are. In the old days, you couldn't even get a game on court one. Me and Geeter were trying to get games at State Beach. The guys were telling us to go to the out of court.
They always kicked us off, Billy.
So do you think it was AVP that created that situation? Do you think it's the network that created that situation?
Let me answer it in a different way. You don't get in the surf business if you don't surf.
Okay.
For so many years, the people driving the business have been from the outside, trying to fit it into their world instead of them trying to fit into the beach volleyball world. So we can go back to when they first put up the stadiums, when they first put up the walls to get people to pay money to go to the beach. I mean, you take all of these things and you break them down, and they are the opposite of what anybody in the surf, skate, snow business does. And those brands and those companies and those worlds are so sensitive to their consumer that the last thing they're going to do is do anything that's going to, you know, tip them over.
Hey, Billy, what is Karch's role going to be?
Well, Karch is what we call him, the chief volleyball officer, just for no other reason than it was just kind of a fun name. But Karch is going to be involved at every event. He's going to be traveling to every single event except for the ones he can't make because of his national team coaching. He'll be out there with the media. He'll be actually playing in some exhibitions. We'll get some of the guys from the bars out there to play in some of these 4-on-4 games. He'll be definitely hanging out with us at the after parties. He'll be in the fashion show with Oakley. He'll be doing a bunch of stuff. I mean, he's just ready to get out there and have some fun again.
Oh, Billy, give us the rundown for your tour schedule. Where is it kicking off? Where are the championships? What do the dates look like for people out there looking to play?
The first event's going to come off in this Saturday in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. We go from Fort Lauderdale to Texas. We go to Galveston, Texas, back to Florida to Siesta Key. Then, not necessarily in this order, but if you go to coronawideopen.com or coronalightwideopen.com, which is the brand that we're driving, we go to Colorado, Santa Cruz, Huntington Beach, Chicago, New Jersey, New York, in Long Island, and then we go to the championships in Manhattan Beach in September to the U.S. Open of Beach Volleyball.
Well, I had a chance to make it out to that event last year. It was a lot of fun. There were people from all over the volleyball universe in the qualifying. You mentioned briefly earlier the opportunity for people that are not at the open level to qualify. Explain how that's going to work for players of different levels in qualifying for your finale.
In every single tournament we run all the divisions. So we've got from the B's to the A's to the double A's, because everybody's trying to work up that ladder. And if you win a tournament in your area, you get an all-expense-paid trip, airfare, and hotel to the U.S. Open of Beach Volleyball. You can still enter the U.S. Open in Manhattan Beach at the end of the season, but you will find that your seed will be below anybody else that's already pre-qualified for no other reason than there's the rating system and the pecking order of that. But it's open to everybody, and that's the whole thing about the Wide Open. It's open to anybody. When you mention the AVP players, we're not restricted to anybody who wants to play in these tournaments. On Sunday, we're also going to have co-ed, and we also have fours, where we do a fours open and a fours A, where two guys, you have to have at least one female on your team, and that's where you dress up and have some fun, and there's a lot of fun beers going on, and it's kind of a good time there. And one thing, just to give you a little heads up on what we're doing a little different in Huntington Beach this year, is we're going to actually divert the rules even further. In Huntington, for the men's and women's open divisions, we're going to go where people are going to enter as an individual. We're going to do a King of the Beach tournament.
Yeah.
And the winning team, the winning player of the men's open and the women's open is going to win $10,000 individually.
Oh, awesome.
So
I'll start training,
basically,
right?
Anybody can enter the open division, and you're going to be put into a pool of three other people, four, and you're going to whittle it down to getting a final King of the Beach.
And when is that event going to happen? What date?
That is in Huntington on June 27th and 8th.
And when do people have to register by?
June 26th.
Okay. I like that, too. You can just show up to the beach and play the very next day. Well, Billy Berger is a longtime member of the volleyball community and pushing the lifestyle with the Corona Wide Open Tour. Check it out at coronawideopen.com or coronalightwideopen.com. Billy, we appreciate you joining us here on the Net Live. Thanks for spending the time.
Billy,
thanks,
great talking to you, buddy.
Take care, Geeter.
All right, Billy.
Bye, guys.
All right, Billy Berger. Hey, I thought he had some very interesting things to say about the way that the business has been stolen or taken over. I've said this before on this program. I think that the X Games, and he said, look, snow, surf, skate, they've taken the entire cool factor that beach volleyball used to have.
You know, I had a long conversation with Billy Berger last year at one of the tournaments, and he was telling me all these things about lifestyle versus performance and what the AVP is doing and what they're trying to do. And he basically kind of outlined exactly what he said here.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really thought about it. And I swear, ever since then, I've thought about it in relation to beach volleyball and where it can go, where it should go, where apparel industries went, you know, where the heck Spot Sport and Side Out and all those companies went. They're all gone and there's nothing anymore. And it was they were there and volleyball flourished because volleyball was kind of how Billy Berger's outlining it. And I hope they do well. I'm worried about the players and the short court, the big court. But as far as side out scoring and everything they're doing, Oakley doing the fashion show, stuff like that, it's perfect. It's
Why awesome. Are you worried about the big court? What concerns you?
I'm concerned that players won't play it. That's the only concern I have. I don't have a problem with it.
I don't think it matters what size the court is for the players. Do you think that they're going to not play because the court is bigger? They don't feel that their abilities match that court size anymore?
For the first year, maybe. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
I don't know. I've gone back and I've played beach on a big court, and it is frustrating when you're used to playing small court for a decade, it's frustrating. But, you know, it's what everyone used to play, so you can get back to that.
You know, I've had four different owners when I've been on the AVP tour in my 13 years, and you know, I had a great relationship with Leonard, and I have a great relationship with the new guys, but I had a great relationship with Berger, too. And one thing I always liked about Berger, even though we were only together for a couple years, the same thing with the AVA, he was never afraid to try new things and to make the sport the best in what he thought it was. You know, he was a lifestyle guy, and that's how he was wanted. And he did have great ideas, and he had a great vision, you know. And yeah, the AVP was in some tough, tough times back then. I mean, when he took over, it was right after we were bankrupt, you know, in 98. But the one thing I always appreciated, you know, before Leonard took it over was that, you know, Billy was not afraid to let us do what we needed to do to try to make it great. You know, he gave me a lot of space to do what I do, and we would create openings for the show, the TV show, where I would get arrested on the beach of Belmar, where I came in on a Harley in Muskegon, skydive Santa Cruz. So there were some cool things we used to do, and Billy was a big part of that. So I've always appreciated that about him.
Nice. It's like the promoter for the White Sox. Can't think of his name, but Disco Demolition Night. Just not afraid to try crazy, crazy different stuff that would make it exciting for the fans. And I'm not sure that I agree with the lifestyle from a standpoint of you have to be able to bring it at night. I'm not sure that's going to work anymore in today's environment. That to put the emphasis on the drinking after the playing and the partying after the playing. Does that work in today's societal environment?
Well, you don't need everybody. You need the big guys. You need the big guns like Hovland and Smith Stoklos, the guys that'll go out and have fun and interact with everybody.
That part I like.
Yeah.
The accessibility. I think you heard him complain about the fact that guys are training from 9 to 11 and then never at the beach.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't know what the solution is to turn that around, because there's cell phones and there's people who move here to play beach volleyball and they get in these cliques and it's tough to break out.
Right.
But here's the deal. Beach volleyball was successful when it was operated like this. It has not been successful nearly to the magnitude it was operating as a performance sport in the last decade.
True. And I've lamented the charging for attendance before also, because if I remember correctly in my life, going back to 92, 93, when you go to the Manhattan Open, it was insane. It looked like six-man looks today, where it's just incredibly crowded, unbelievably
crowded.
Which
is what you want.
Right. And now today, it's not as crowded as it was
back then. It's managed, it's pedicured,
right.
I don't know, I had this conversation very briefly with Geeter at the end, after last week's show. I was like, is the stadium good for AVP, for beach volleyball? Is having a stadium good? And I don't know.
I think it's half and half. I think you got to take away some of the stadium. I think you got to have old school, new school blended together.
Well, here's the deal.
Half stadium, half not.
One of your greatest assets on the AVP is Geeter and his ability to rev up crowds to talk and be this great voice.
Mm-hmm.
And you just completely close him out to like the 10 fans that are in the stadium on Saturday.
You're not pulling anybody from the Strand or up Manhattan Beach and go down and see what's going on.
I mean, Geeter, how do you feel about that?
No, I think you make a good point. I mean, I always feel like I'm in a little difficult position because he's my employer, you know. So
right. Well, we'll see how that
works. I'm trying to make it always a positive experience and see the bright side of things on there. And you know, I definitely think you guys have great points. You know where I stand on admission. I just feel like we should pay to see these guys play.
But
I hear the other side of the argument as well. I just feel like the stadium, when it's rocking, when it's raging, whether it's Chicago or Manhattan, I feel like there's nothing better than that. But I agree with Danny in terms of, like, you know, on Friday, it's not like that. There's so much action going on outside, and we really are closed off. And I think what we're trying to do new this year is, and we did it in Santa Barbara, was bring a microphone out to feature court 1 and 2. I'm not sure how it's going to work in terms of the sound system needs to get a little bit better, but I think that's a step in the right direction because, you know, a lot of the action, you guys know because you go, it all happens out there until Sunday.
Yeah, I think we've spent a lot of time lamenting some of the negatives about the AVP on here, but we just need to spend some time talking about the positives. And one of the positives, I think, and I think this is where I don't know, Berger has a perception that the athletes are never available, but I think compared to other professional sports, I think that the athletes are incredibly
available. They are available.
They're incredibly available, and they're personable.
They're great people. They'll sign autographs. They'll do anything you want after they're leaving a match. I've seen them do it. It's really a neat experience if you're a young athlete, if you're a young sports fan, to go to one of these tournaments, like you guys talked about on a Friday, or even a Saturday, get on some of the outer courts and see the matches that are going on and meet the athletes in person. It's really a cool thing to be able to do that's just not present in so many other sports.
Yeah, there's no other sport where you could just, as soon as someone wins or loses, you're basically on the court, high-fiving them, getting a picture.
Yeah.
Asking for an autograph. And I think the AVP guys, real quick, is doing a good job of trying to get back to its roots by making Mike Dodd the commissioner. No one understood the lifestyle and was a part of the glory days more than Mike Dodd, bringing in Canyon and guys like that. I think they're doing the right things to try to make it what it was.
I went to the Manhattan Beach Championships last year, and it was a fun little event. I thought that they had some guys on the mic and had a center court that was open. There weren't a lot of spectators, unfortunately, but there were lots of people playing. It just looked like a fun event for players. I'm not sure how fun it was for spectators.
The event in Manhattan wasn't as well attended as the one in Santa Monica a couple months earlier.
Okay.
The one in Santa Monica was pretty bumping, and it wasn't in nearly as good a location.
And I want to take issue a little bit with the Craig Buck comment, too, because Craig Buck, I don't think Craig Buck could step out and play even in the small court today.
Craig Buck,
that's a good point.
Well, no, let's take Tom Hoff. He might be close to Craig Buck. He's up there in years. He's played a lot of indoor volleyball, middle. Okay, can Tom Hoff step out and dominate on the AVP Tour in the small court? I don't think so.
No.
Tom Hoff's a great player. I don't think he can dominate on the AVP Tour. I disagree with that. It has increased the ability of some of those guys, but don't tell me Phil can't play the whole game.
No. Phil would be the best player whenever he plays.
Sean Scott can play the whole game. No, the second big guy, right?
But Brad Keenan. What about Brad Keenan?
No, Brad Keenan cannot.
Well, that's his example. That's a good comparison, Brad Keenan and Craig Buck.
But I think more than not could play the big court. I think Brad Keenan's a fine example of the exception, but I think if you look at a lot of the other big guys that are out there, you talk about Furbringer, he could play the whole court. You talk about Strickland, he could play the whole court. Who else? Do you have another big stiff that can't play the whole game?
I'm not sold on those two being able to compete to be at the same level on the big court.
Fur used to. He played the big court when he first started.
Yeah, what now, Dan? Furby?
Yeah, he got fifth with Swati before he was even on the tour, Furbringer.
Okay.
All right. Hey,
Dan, who knows everything about the sport. Let's go, buddy.
I'm looking it up.
Geeter, I hate to do this to you, but our audio is...
Yeah, I got to go.
It's terrible.
Anyway.
Switch off and we have John Austin to get to.
I'll be listening. Thanks for having me.
You know what? You go hang out with the Lakers. Do something, less fun than this.
Yeah, I'm going to go maybe, hang out in the waiting pool with Ron.
Yeah, see if Kobe's watching a movie or something. You can pal around with him. Ask him if you've got an extra headphone.
Right, hey, great job today. Have fun with Coach and tell him I said congratulations.
All right, will do. Thanks for calling in, Geeter. See you next week.
Furbringer got a fifth with David Swadek in 2001. Wasn't that short court?
Huh?
I thought that was short court.
Well, you'll have to go back and check it out. That's your job. You're the research guy on this program, Dan. Do your job. Hey, we didn't mention earlier, but Dan, you and I will get to it. We'll get to the important changes for the six man.
Yeah,
we glossed over it just briefly,
but there was a city council meeting.
I've got it downstairs. It's in the beach reporter.
But it's not.
It's not 100%. Yeah. But you and I are going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the six man. All right. Let's get to the NCAA championships. Stanford playing at home, took it down this past weekend in Maples Pavilion and went on to the championship. We are pleased to be joined by a head coach in his fourth season and now national championship head coach, John Costi. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, we'll hang in there with the audio and see how it goes. John, this is a team that a few years ago went 3-25, if I'm correct. Talk a little bit about the journey from that to this past weekend.
It's been a great journey. Even the 3-25 team, which we had these five seniors who just won a national championship starting out, they were competitive. We were in most matches. And we were in most games, and the experience came from late in games. We lost a lot of close games, and it's just we built the experience over the last few years, and recruiting was good to us also. With our five seniors, we brought in the following year Spencer McLaughlin, building up our outside hitting core, and then the following year we brought in Eric Soji and Brad Lawson, along with Gus Ellis, and with a good couple strong recruiting classes and veteran seniors, we were able to put it together on Saturday.
Do you think the NCAA game is more of a recruiting game, or is it a coaching and teaching game?
You know what? It's both. It's both. You have to, you know, you have to have the talent to win, but you also have to coach them, because at each level there's a big jump. So from high school to college ball, there's a big jump. To get from the bottom of the MPSF to the top of the MPSF, there's a lot of learning and developing, along with a lot of weight training. And then from the college level to the international level, there's another big jump. There's very few people who can make immediate impacts jumping from one level to the next, and it just takes time. And that's where the coaching part comes in.
Speaking of that jump from college to international, which of your guys do you think will make that jump into a profession?
That's hard to say. I think Kavika's got a great shot. You know, he's just a very knowledgeable setter, and I think he has enough size to compete at the net at the next level, and he truly understands the game. And so Kavika, yes. Romero, you know, he just keeps getting better. You know, he's just a 6'6", 6'7" horse. And with a strong arm, so he wants to give it a shot. So we'll see, you know, we'll see how he does. And then, you know, Brad Lawson is Brad Lawson, and he's only a sophomore. He's got a good jump, big arm swing, and already knows the game. And he still has a couple more years of developing his strength and overall game before he even hits that. So I think there's a couple guys who from this team can move on. And of course, you know, there's always our sophomore libero, Eric Soji, who's, you know, he's just a step beyond everybody else.
Well, let's talk about this team and you, this past weekend. What was your approach coming into the weekend? It had been a very up-and-down season for the entire MPSF in the national rankings. We had teams go from 2nd to 11th, back to 1st, back down to 5th. And there were teams all over the place taking over number 1. Northridge, Pepperdine, yourself, all had been ranked number 1 at one point. I think maybe even Hawaii. What did you tell your team going into the finals?
You know, this whole year is about the process. You know, it's a process to get to the national championships. And we didn't necessarily focus on long-range goals much this year. We talked about them in the beginning, and it just went all the way through the national semifinals. We're playing Ohio State. You know, there is no tomorrow. It's today. And then when we got out there and competed against Ohio State, which was a talented team, they brought it to us. Once we won that match, then we moved on to practice, and we focused in. Okay, we need to get better today because Penn State's a talented team. We need to get better on Friday before we get into that national championship match, and that's something that we did. We focused on our serving and passing for a good portion of practice on Friday, so we could be, we could have a good match on Saturday.
Well, how much time do you spend focusing on your own performance coming up, or looking forward to a match, and how much do you spend on the other team and what they're doing?
I'd say about 70% on us and 30% on them, because if you don't play well, you're not going to win. So you've got to play well. So we worry a lot about what we're doing in practice and what we need to get better. What parts of the game we need to get better. And then the other 30% is understanding what they like to do, their strong points and their weaknesses. And we've got a few guys on our team who love to watch videotape. And you already know two of them, which are the Soji brothers.
Yeah.
They'll watch volleyball, you know, day and night. And they understand what they're looking at. We never had to train them to point out things. They find it, and they'll find things that we hadn't seen yet. So there's a good, strong our guys know what the other team wants to do, and that's you know, that was a benefit to us on Saturday. We were able to understand the video that with the quick turnaround and really get some key points to slow down Penn State's offense.
You're listening to Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We're talking to head coach John Costi of the Stanford Cardinal, who just took down the national championship this past weekend. This is your fourth season as the head coach with this team. You've been an assistant for, I believe, 12 years before that. But do you feel like at 4 years this is finally your team, or did it occur a year before, or are you maybe still in that process?
You know, I don't think it ever will be my team. And just for the fact that it's, you know, Stanford men's volleyball, it's the program. You know, I've actually been with the program 20 years now, and started with Ruben Yevis and worked with Don Shaw, took over when Fred took the national team job, and I feel like I'm just part of this overall program. And the win on Saturday was about the program. You know, it was about our alums who didn't have a chance to play in the national championship. It was for the guys like Canyon and the 92 team who didn't get the win, and the 89 team who didn't get the win. It's for those guys, and I'm just a part of this big picture, and I'm just real fortunate to be in this position.
Well, it's worth mentioning that the 92 team lost to Pepperdine. Just want to sneak that in there.
I know.
Make sure. We won't mention the fact that my career ended there at Stanford when we lost to you guys in the playoffs my last year of college, but it's a sad time for me. Now, tell us a little bit about what's coming up. So you won the national championship on Saturday. How long does this really last for you as a coaching staff before you're on to the next season, the next recruit, the next cycle of your never-ending job?
2 weeks. For us, it's going to be 2 weeks. We're going to give our guys 2 weeks to enjoy it, allow it all to sink in, and then we get back into the weight room and get back onto the practice floor and start going after it again. You know, once a coach, always a coach. I've already actually have been thinking about next year, even before this weekend hit. And, you know, and it has to do with being prepared. And this team deserves to take a little bit of time to truly soak it in, take in all the accolations and the interviews and everything else that comes with it, and enjoy it. And they need the rest. You know, it's a long season, as you know, and we do have to take a break from it now and then.
Well, it's good that I was calling your office today and you actually picked up the phone, unlike John Spraw, who apparently has escaped to some unknown location in Mexico a short 12 hours after his season ended. It's, you're still doing the job. We'll deal with John later. Do you get a vacation now with your family, or do you have to just stick in the office this entire next 2 weeks?
That was yesterday. Got to see my two kids awake for the first time in about 4 or 5 days. But, yeah, we get away. We'll take a couple vacations. But, you know, it's family time. My wife works, so it's not we have to program in the family vacations. We just can't take the time off. And, you know, it's still a busy time of the year. We still got recruiting coming up. And there's no resting on your laurels in the MPSF, because next year is going to be another very tough year in the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation, and we're already looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, tell us a little bit about next season. Who do you think are going to be the teams to beat?
Wow. You know, I think we're going to be good again. I believe USC returns everybody. I think there's a couple teams who will have to wait and see how recruiting goes for the incoming classes work for them. I think off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember who some of the teams, what positions they've lost.
Well, we'll get you off the hook on that. We don't want to have you thinking about it already. Maybe we'll call you back in 2 weeks.
Please do that.
Excellent. Well, John, thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. We wish you the best of luck next season, and hopefully we can have the same conversation about a year from now.
Oh, I would love it. And thank you for having me on the show.
All right. Head coach John Costi from the Stanford Cardinal, now the winners of the 2010 Men's NCAA Championship. All right. Dan?
Yes, sir.
We heard that word again. Process.
Process.
How many times are we going to hear that from these high-level coaches? Every single time it's about process.
How many times am I going to have to type the same sentence?
I think it's great. I think it's great that we continue to hear that particular phrase all the time. It's not about the winning. So much of what is said today in the media is about if you won. You know, whether you talked about Dan Marino, who never won Super Bowl, or you talked about John Elway until the last 2 years of his career, it was always about these guys can't win the big one. Donovan McNabb can't win the big one. Well, how about like 8 years of extreme success that's no longer valued? How about going through the process, getting better, making your teammates around you better? Is that no longer valued?
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, but I'm not sure how much, like, if they believe that it's about the process 100%, you know, because you go into a match and you say, man, we really need to win this game, you know?
Well,
you're thinking
about
winning individual games.
Yeah, you want to win individual games, but but to get that done, you have to go through the process, yes?
Yeah.
You can't just think, oh, we're going to win this match every day in practice. No?
Yeah, that will, it seems like the process comes from competing in practice really hard, you know? And, you know, I would imagine the best teams you were ever on were the teams that practiced against each other the hardest, the co-competitive competition.
There has to be a co-competitive side of it, and it can't turn ugly. I've been on teams where it's turned ugly.
Yeah.
And I've been a part of that, and that's not very good. I'm not proud of it, but it has happened. You know, I didn't get to it with John Costi, but I wanted to. I wanted to know why I got cut from the B team back when he coached.
The Stanford team?
No, the B team, the USA National B team.
National
I came out of junior
team.
College. He cut me. Never even gave me a shot.
Oh, man.
I was bitter for years. Really, really angry.
Even when you were on the A team, you were still bitter?
No, I was no longer bitter. I was bitter in college because this is right before I went to college.
Oh.
But I was a crazy guy back then. Jeez. Just absolutely nuts.
Well, I believe it.
Yeah, you should believe it. All right, Dan, we're going to take a little bit of break. We'll be right back. We're going to talk about the six-man, the big changes coming to the six-man. Manhattan Beach City Council throwing around words like riot. Oh, my goodness. These people are out of control. Unbelievable. All right, the Volleyball Network, The Net Live. We'll see you here in just a minute. Hang on. Questionable calls coming. Lots more good stuff.
Dan.
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever.
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Or, is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench, sub yourself in, pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
Missed the latest episode of The Net Live? Download it now by clicking on the iTunes logo on thevolleyballnetwork.com. It's free.
Yes, yes. Driving back from break. Get some. Here it comes. Boom. Love that, Dan. Love it.
We needed the boom.
The Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com. We've had a great show so far. Talked to John Costi from Stanford. We've talked to Billy Berger of the Corona Wide Open Tour. If you want to check out any of those links, Dan's getting them up there on the website on thevolleyballnetwork.com. You can email us, thenetlive@gmail.com. Or you can call us, 347-677-1525. We've gotten rid of Geeter. Gotten rid of Reed, so it's just Dan and I. We can take your calls. We want to hear from you. We need to know what do you think about some of the things that are being said here on the Net Live. I've been getting some texts from my buddy Brandon Rosenthal over there at Lipscomb University. He's talking about the process and stuff. He's actually listening to the show live today for once instead of getting it iTunes like 2 weeks later. But he's saying, were you bitter way back talking about me? He said, I was thinking you were more just angry. Super angry. He put it a different way, though. Words we can't use here on the show. But,
What?
So,
all right. What's going on?
All right. Let's talk about six man.
You got what is that? The Easy Reader.
I got the Beach Reporter right here in front of me.
Oh, I haven't read that one.
Surf, Turf, and Hula right here on the front. But it also says City enacts drastic changes to popular six man tourney. This has been a big topic. The six man drawing 60,000 people to the beach last first week of August. It's worth mentioning that the Kind of Good crew did finish second behind the passing of Kevin Barnett to get to the semifinal loss and then work our way back through the losers to enter the finals and lost to who?
Magnum.
Magnum, Team Magnum. But there were no less than five current national team members on the court four AVP current pros on the court and a smattering of other mid-level players and ex-national team people.
Yeah, it was pretty high-level volleyball.
It was unbelievable. It's some great volleyball if you get a chance to come see Sunday. Now, Sunday is not the issue. People are talking more about Saturday where all these people are there, 60,000 people.
Party time.
Yeah, and that's what the issue has been. The issue has been alcohol, noise, crowds. Now, they had 60,000 people. They had 8 arrests. Oh, my God. It's out of control. It's absolutely out of control. And here, Manhattan Beach, Mayor Pro Tem Richard Montgomery Burns. He actually, here's what his quote was in the paper. When we hear the word riot, when you ring that bell, you can't unring it. We have to take the extra step to protect our own backyard. My goodness. 6 arrests, 8 arrests. You have more arrests on every Friday and Saturday night than that. Montgomery Burns.
Yeah, and there's like fights at the six man. Like guys throw punches, and it never escalates to anything more than like one punch because
it's not that kind of crowd.
Yeah, everyone's like, whoa, dude, stop punching people.
It's not that kind of crowd, and I've never even seen that. I mean, the man starts talking about a riot, an absolute exaggeration of the truth of what's actually occurring out there. But nonetheless, a city council elected in a small town with a lot of money and grumpy old residents has to show that it's doing something. So here's what they are doing. They say, here are the big changes they're going to make. No alcohol will be tolerated. No large coolers will be admitted, and all coolers will be checked by security upon entrance. Which seems to me the whole thing will be fenced off this year,
Well, no, that's the whole problem. They can't fence the whole thing off and charge admission because the Coastal Commission won't allow it.
Well, good. Well, they're going to have to fence the whole thing off somehow if they're going to check all the coolers upon admittance. No unsealed containers will be allowed. Increased police, fire, and security personnel with increased enforcement and ticketing for alcohol violations. Elimination of all home furniture, structures, generators, and sound systems. The number of open teams will be reduced by 20. 10 men's and 10 women's have been eliminated, and the team fees will be increased.
Wait, is that set in stone?
I don't know if this is set in stone. This is what it said here.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and you know what the fee's going from, Dan? $1,000 to $2,500 for the team.
For a sponsored team.
For a sponsored team.
I have to go back to Fresh Brothers and say, hey, $2,500.
That's not going to happen.
No.
Teams limited to one 10x10 canopy per team.
That's crazy.
So we're all going to sit under one 10x10 canopy. That's going to be nice, Dan. I hope that your lap is nice.
You can't bring umbrellas, or maybe you can bring umbrellas, but that's even worse because if five guys bring umbrellas, that's way more space taken up, and it's dangerous because those things blow away.
Increased fencing around the entire perimeter and to separate tent spaces. The fences will double for emergency access lanes, which will also be widened. Elimination of nationally sponsored teams to reduce the publicity generated by the sponsor.
That doesn't generate any.
Yeah, that's what they say they're going to do. This is going to prevent a riot, quote unquote.
There's going to be a riot because of these changes.
So the fees go from an open team $1,000 to $2,500, which is going to knock out several teams. The regular teams are limited to 12 players, and they'll see their fees go from $600 to $1,100. By the way, our teams are now limited to 20 members. So they're
Is it 20 or 12?
20 for the open.
It says there?
Sponsored teams, 20 players.
Oh, okay.
Regular teams, 12 players. Each additional player for any team must pay $100 to play. So in addition to that amount, the Masters team fee will increase from $450 to $500. So we're not going to tax Mike Dodd and their team anymore. The Masters play. They can still come and play for less money. I don't really have an argument with that. I don't really.
I gotta tell you, I thought it was 12 members per team, and Barney, I was having trouble figuring out how we were gonna get you on the team.
It's okay, Dan. I was just gonna say to you that I'm actually considering playing some beach volleyball this year.
For real? This week,
maybe. Yeah, you'll have to tell me when you're playing this week.
Let's do it.
I'll bring my super white body down to the beach.
Yeah, well, Nils and I are going out and playing. And
20 players, they say. So do I make a 20-player roster? Well, I don't make a 12-player roster, but
We would get you on any roster. I was just trying to figure out how to do it.
Dan, is this going to make a difference for the six man? Is this going to quell the partying, or is it just going to go elsewhere?
I don't really know. All these changes don't really affect the fans and the people that go to drink. And it all hinges on if they can actually curb the drinking. That is all. Everything else has
an interesting point. They're curbing the drinking of the players, but they're not curbing the drinking of the attendees.
Well, no. I'm saying drinking at the event, which is the issue. It's not the players and guest 1700 on the chat board. It's like, yeah, it's not about the players. And actually, Brad Jacobson at Civic Couch has a good blog article about this. I'll link it. Players are just playing, and it's, you know, they're estimating, I don't know, 40,000 people who come who don't even play.
Right.
I'm not sure about that.
That means 20,000 people play.
Yeah, 4,000 people.
Their math is fuzzy, to say the least.
Yeah, 4,000 people play. And
they were predicting an 80,000-person riot for next year. They were already to it that it was going to be 80,000 people and there was going to be a riot.
I don't know what this is going to do. You're going to piss off every single person who plays, and there's going to be some people protesting who just won't play.
Well, I think one of the interesting things about this is that Jay Sakely, who is in charge of the tournament, his father, Charlie Sakely, started the tournament, is in support of these changes, and I think that's why it was easier to make these changes. He wants to see it return to the volleyball.
Let's not kid ourselves here. Some of these changes are made because the Sakely family wants it to be more of a volleyball tournament, and that's fine.
Right.
That's great. But it already is a volleyball tournament on Sunday. That's when it's high-level, top-flight volleyball. Saturday's the party, and that's fun. We're not big partiers. I don't even drink.
I'll tell you what,
I love it.
I'll tell you what would fix it. You put a single elim section on Saturday at the end of the day. You end it with single elim.
That would
keep the guys from really going. The guys who wanted to make Sunday would keep it under control.
Barney.
Single.
Think of that?
Yeah. Right off the top. Right here. Dude. Genius in Redondo Beach.
That is a good idea.
Jay Sakely, I hope you're listening to the show. Mayor Pro Tem Montgomery Burns. You know, this could fix it all for you. Right there, single elim, Saturday night, Saturday
afternoon.
Start the
first round of the playoffs on Saturday.
On Saturday, about 3
Holy
o'clock.
Smokes.
Then you could stave off the partying till the evening, and then you still have to try and show up in the morning. What do you think about that? Chat board, get it going. Somebody call in 347-677-1525 if you have something to say about it. I don't think this is necessarily the best way to go about it. I think it's an overreaction to something that was a problem, but not a problem in the way that it kept getting described by members of the city council. And repeatedly they were using inflammatory language that was in no way representative of what's actually been happening at the tournament. I think these days if you get 3 or 4 letters from angry residents in a city of a few hundred thousand or 100,000, that you have to react to those 3 or 4 residents. Dear people of the Strand, you bought a home on the Strand. Shut your mouths. It's busy down there. You knew it when you bought the house. Your city is getting supported by the tax revenue from all of these people spending an incredible amount of money in and around your city during that weekend. So I hate to see that go away. Now, can we have people peeing in the bushes? No, but that's always a problem. That's a problem every weekend. Don't pretend it's unique to the six man.
Yeah, it's just in larger quantities and in more areas, I suppose.
Maybe.
But come on. It's
maybe.
One night. Give me a break.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't have fun anymore. Can't have fun anymore in today's world.
Can't have fun in Manhattan Beach.
All right, let's move from six-man outdoor beach, which we all love, to six-man indoor. The Men's World League roster was announced this past week, right after our show, and it is a 19-man roster. Includes a lot of new names. Max Holt, middle blocker from Penn State, going to be making his appearance. Tyler Hildebrandt is on the list.
Hildebrandt. He's still around.
Yep, he's back around. His knees are feeling pretty good. Saw him not too long ago.
He should be playing beach.
Russell Holmes, middle blocker out of BYU. He's on the list here. A lot of old names, too. You've got Lamborn, Sujo, Paddock, Lee, Rooney, Anderson, Pretty, Millar, Salmon, Jablonski, Stanley, Hansen, Andy Hine, who had an excellent early part of World League last year, went through some injuries. We'll see if he comes back strong. Scott Tuzinski. Alfie Reft will be the backup libero, backing up Lamborn, and hopefully seeing some time throughout the World League. And Paul Lottman, who I think was the breakout guy last year at outside hitter out of Long Beach State. He was just a physical guy with a real quick arm, good jumper. I'm excited to see what he does here in year number 2. I'm excited to see Matt Anderson, if he comes back stronger this season, if he's still sporting the mustache. That's what I really want to know. He's still going porn star mustache. That would be exciting. And then, of course, you have Alan Knipe leading the charge with assistant Gary Sato and technical coordinator Chris Jackson, Aaron Brock on medical support, and Rob Browning, scoring leader, which
what about Ron Larson, who coached against me in 1999 and 2000 when he was with Rutgers Newark, and I was playing with NJIT. You think he remembers me?
No.
We beat them, and I started.
You want to tell him about it? We'll get him here on the show.
Yeah, let's talk to him about it.
One notable person left out is Tom Hoff.
Yeah.
Longtime middle blocker, gold medalist, been on the team since 1997. And he is off the World League roster.
Is he cut or did he not join the team?
Word has it that he was available. He's healthy, wanted to play, and Coach Knipe told him they needed him later in the year instead of being in World League.
So he's not off the – he's not cut. Not there.
He's just not on the World League roster, so he's not eligible to play. But I've talked to people. He's in the gym. I'll be in the gym next week.
He's in the
checking
gym.
Checking it out. Yep, he's been in the gym.
Interesting. I was just about to ask, is this something like I hear a lot about you guys saying Tom Hoff is instrumental to a lot of the day-to-day things with the team. Now, I was like, is this something to just someone else can figure out how to do it? So when you're without Tom, you know what to do, so you're not completely lost?
I think from a middle blocker standpoint, that's true. You have to groom some new middle blockers and get some guys in there because you don't know if Tom's going to make it. The bottom line is that I'm about to be 36. I think he'll be 37 this year. You don't know if he's going to make it another 2.5-3 years to 2012 in London. So you have to look at some younger talent at some point against good competition.
A little thin middle blocker. Annie Hines pretty good, but after him.
I keep hearing good things about Max Holt. I hear that he's pretty gnarly and pretty good. Russell Holmes,
a good
we'll
name.
See. I've seen
Max
Russell
Holt
a few times. We'll see what he can do. Andy Hine, boy, he started strong last year. He put on a couple of nice performances in World League. I'd like to see him do that again, especially because he's a Pepperdine guy. And, I mean, Dave Lee and Ryan Millar, if those two are healthy, I can't see anyone beating them out for the starting positions. If they continue to play the way they have, those guys are two of the best middles in the world. You do have to pass the ball up to them. They're not the biggest guys in the world, but boy, they play some wonderful, wonderful volleyball. So I'm excited to get out on the World League traveling gig. I will be broadcasting it again. The finals are going to be on Versus. We're not sure where the rest of it's going to be yet. That's an issue for the USOC. But shortly, hopefully, we will know what's going on. And no Loy Ball. Loy Ball not back.
No.
Maybe next
year. We knew that.
I don't think he's coming back. Why would you come back?
What's he going to be, 40 when
the
Olympics?
The age doesn't matter. I mean, they talked about it here. Reed touched on it briefly before our first segment, talking about Loy Ball being 38 and Nicola Gurbic, who just led Cuneo to the Italian champion.
Reed was saying as the commercial was playing.
Yeah. But they're both 38. Old setters.
Yeah, I didn't say that age was a big deal. I was just saying he's going to be 40.
Right.
Like, I didn't. Well, okay, age is a big deal.
A big deal. If you're an outside hitter, it's a huge deal. You're a setter. I'm not sure what you do. No, just kidding. Come on. But those are important guys. So I think it's going to be a good season for them. Russia is going to be the big matchup. The Russians are going to play against the United States. I believe it's in Chicago. I have to look back at the exact schedule, but they're going to be playing in Chicago. They're going to be playing just outside of Charlotte and going to be playing in Wichita, Kansas for the second year. Wichita was a great event last year. So if you're near any of those places, get on usavolleyball.org or get on fivb.com or .ch, I think is another one, and check it out. Look at the schedule and get out to one of these events and see some of these guys in action. Dan, we have a couple questionable calls I want to get to.
Yep.
Questionable call.
We already got the one.
Yeah, we got to one of yours, which was, is Mark Pavlik the best men's coach in the nation? But we didn't talk about it. Is he? What do you think?
You know, he's got two national championships. Who else has two national championships out there? And
Marv Dunphy.
Yeah, okay.
Al Skates has just, I think, maybe above two somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. How many does Al have in the last...
Zero.
20 years.
8 years?
Two?
Not many.
Three?
Not
anyway,
many.
Anyway, he's got to be up there. He's got to be in the conversation. And you know what? He's hanging out with Russ Rose, who's got, what, three in the row?
Three and counting?
No, he's got four. So he and Russ Rose are just hanging out with their national championships, talking about it.
Can you imagine what that office looks like? How much hardware is in that office right now? If they had a cohabitation office, I don't even know if you could get in the room. You had to step over MVPs and national championship trophies.
Would you want that? Wouldn't you just say, hey, put a divider here?
I think actually when you come visit him, he'd be like, hey, take that. Just, you want one of those? There's too many.
That'd be great. Mark Pavlik called me David.
So he doesn't know who you are.
No, he knew who I was. He just everyone calls me David because Dave and Dan are so close.
I met Pav back in 1995, I want to say. I think at the B team. And Pav, to me, he's always been just a great guy, very personable, very likable, approachable for the athletes. I think he's just a great dude. And I've always been happy to see him doing well. And obviously, they're not getting, in a lot of cases, some of the same high school talent that comes out from some of the West Coast schools or some of the other places in the nation. Penn State's not the premier program when you think about attractiveness to a high school athlete. Okay.
Yeah, but
he's getting
some
good athletes.
On the East Coast, that's where you go. If you're great at volleyball, you're going nowhere but there.
But my point is this. He's getting some good players, but I don't think that the level of players he's getting overall is probably as high as some of the other schools.
True.
But Pav brings these guys in, and we see the results.
Yeah.
We see the results.
He's got two national team guys right now.
Yeah.
Holt and Anderson. Also, they've been in the J-Hos that wrote on the chat board just now. Penn State in the finals two of the last 3 years. He's getting into the finals,
oh,
and he's winning.
Dude, they're doing it right. They're doing it right, and they're doing it in their gym because, as Jay touched on, their conference they play in, not very good.
No, their gym's awesome. Their gym's fun to play in.
But it's interesting that if you're not playing good competition all the time, it can either be bad for you because you never face good competition, or it can be good for you because you have to worry about what you're doing on your side of the court, irrespective of what the other side is doing. And I think that plays to your advantage when you go to a national championship. You're not concerned about what the other side is doing. You're concerned about what you're doing, and you spend a lot of time working on that. I think that may work to their advantage. But obviously, Pavlik has done a great job, and bringing in Jay Hosek, a questionable move, definitely. But maybe that's made a difference. I don't know. No, Jay, we love you. Please. All right, I want to know, question from me, who would star in the SportsCenter-style commercial for beach and for indoor? Now that beach is a property with ESPN, who is going to be on the SportsCenter? And what are they going to be doing?
You know, they're not going to have a shirt on.
You think about it.
I'm thinking about a guy. Yeah,
I've got indoor.
Yeah. Who you got?
I've got David Lee.
Yeah.
He's sitting there typing in a suit with no sleeves.
No offense, Reed. David Lee.
He's got no sleeves. Everything he does just has no sleeves. He's flexing all the time.
And you know what it is? He's sitting at a table and like, or he's sitting at a chair like in the waiting room. And two, you know, Stuart Scott and Scott Van Pelt go walking out in basketball gear. They're about to go play pickup. And they walk right past David Lee. David Lee sees him. He's like, yo, you guys playing basketball? I'll play. And then he gets up and walks and goes and plays basketball with him. Because that's what David Lee does. He's like, oh, volleyball? I can do that. Let's go. Serve it up.
See, I was thinking more how David Lee would be in his office and he'd have his sleeves torn off and Stuart Scott and those guys would walk by and see that. And then you'd see a shot of those guys doing SportsCenter later in the evening and they'd have no sleeves.
Ooh, that,
modeling David
that
Lee.
Might be a little better.
Yeah. He's my guy. All right, who's beach?
Maybe Rosie, just because he's got this great appeal. I don't know if you want Rosie talking in it, but I don't know what it would be.
Around with his shirt off?
It'd be Rosie. Or Phil. Phil just like being imposing and just staring down at people. But the height thing, they have NBA players in there all the time. They don't really – the height thing's kind of old. The new Albert Pujols SportsCenter commercial, have you seen that one?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll
He's
check
the
it
machine.
Out.
Ah, the fax machine.
Whoa, you said the machine. There's only one machine. Sasha Vujicic. He's the machine. I am machine. Have you seen those YouTube clips? They're friggin'
no,
awesome.
No, I see him in Manhattan Beach all the time.
Have you not seen The Machine? Look up Sasha Vujicic, The Machine, on YouTube.
Right.
You have
somebody
to
link
it. Everyone out there should do it.
Somebody link it.
Everyone out there needs to do it and check out the Sasha Vujicic Machine. It's hilarious stuff. All right, Dan, let's get to your other question before we get out of here. Who has it right, Corona Wide Open or AVP?
You go first.
Who has it right? Ooh, sheesh. It's a messy question. Let's take a call instead. 615, you're on the air.
Charlie Hustle here.
Oh, no, it's Brandon Rosenthal, Charlie Hustle. What's going on?
I've got to meet the other Rosie. Everybody wants to know if we're brothers, and we're not, obviously.
You're not brothers.
Can the Net Live make this happen?
I think we could set that up.
Can we put intern Alex on this, IA?
Intern Alex can be on that idea. You have provided us with an intern. We will see if we can arrange a meeting with your long-lost brother.
Yes. Is he bald? I forget.
No.
No, I didn't think so.
He's a 6'3". He's a stud, man.
No, I know he's a stud. I mean, he's always on TV. People are always asking if we're brothers.
Are you a gnarly athlete?
Barney? His
name is Charlie Hustle.
Okay.
Substantial. How about that? Substantial.
You work.
I wouldn't go gnarly. I would go substantial.
All right.
Substantial as far as size. You are 6'6".
All right. I'll give you that. I've got the heart of a Dan Madden. How about that?
There we go.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Charlie Hustle.
Love the show.
All right. Later. Brandon Rosenthal. All right, so let's get back to our question. Who has the right Corona wide open?
You know what?
AVP.
AVP's still around. They've been around for a while, and they have the name. But I like what Corona wide open's doing. I like their methodology.
You're hedging the bet. I'm going to say this. I like that both are around.
Yeah.
I'm going with AVP.
Okay.
Because the AVP is paying players. The AVP is making it possible for players to be volleyball players.
Yeah.
And Corona wide open's not at that point yet.
Right.
And honestly, I'll support anyone that makes it possible for players to be professionals.
I do like.
And I think it's the AVP at this point.
I do like the Corona Wide Open for the cool factor. They're doing some cool stuff, and I like being at those events. I like being at AVP events too, but it's for a different reason. It's for the players. Sunday morning, AVP, nothing better. Watching those losers bracket finals.
That's your thing.
That's my thing.
I like it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great show. John Costi, Billy Berger, Chris McGee, Reed Pretty, Jay Hosick. Boy, oh boy, that's a bunch of people. Brandon Rosenthal. That's a whole bunch of people in the world. It's been good. Why don't we try and get ourselves out of here?
Yeah. How do we do that?
Well, I'm
just
working on it.
Keep talking?
I'm working on it.
All right.
I got to turn the volume back up. But we'll get out of here. Well, Dan, we're going to play some volleyball this week. It's going to be good.
I can't wait.
It's going to be fun.
Who's your partner going to be? Are you and I playing together? Or
maybe
you and
me. Yeah.
You and,
I got to train. I got to train for upcoming six man. You know?
Do you need me to get my guy Billy?
If I'm going to get in the top 12, I got to train.
Ooh, true. Yeah.
No, I got to come down to the beach and just hit 4 or 5 balls.
All right.
I can't come down and play a full game right away. I'll be wrecked for sure. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next Monday. We've got Dan Levy coming on, Misty May's agent, talk about the business of volleyball. That's going to be a good one.
Ooh.
Keep playing. Keep having fun. We appreciate you being here. Check us out, thevolleyballnetwork.com. See ya.